I'm Brian Ellison, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Jury selection for Missouri Governor Eric Greitens' felony case begins today. And while the trial itself won't kick off until next week, the cast of characters is already Shakespearean in scope. So exactly who is involved? And why does it matter? Today, we'll learn about the prosecution, the defense, and the judge who will help determine the governor's future. Then, after nearly four decades, Cypress Avenue is saying goodbye. We'll hear a conversation between host Bill Shapiro, producer Ron Jones, and our host Steve Kraske about 40 years of music. We'll close the hour with your weekend to-do list. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. After months of anticipation, it is finally here. Jury selection in the felony invasion of privacy case against Missouri Governor Eric Greitens began this morning. The trial itself, in which Greitens is accused of taking a picture of a nude or partially nude woman with whom he was having an affair in a way that the picture could be transmitted, will begin on Monday. But following the ins and outs of this case, not to mention all the other investigations and legislative committee reports related to the governor at the moment, can be a little like keeping track of the characters in a Shakespearean drama. And to that end, today on Up to Date, we're taking a look at who's who among the prosecutors and the defense team and even the judge as the first trial of a sitting governor in Missouri history gets underway. Joining us as our guides are Rachel Lippman and Joe Manis. They've been covering this case and the ongoing saga of Eric Greitens for St. Louis Public Radio. Rachel and Joe, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for asking me.
Glad to be here.
So let me start with you, Joe. It seems like a lot of water's passed under the bridge since you and I sat in the press gallery in the House chamber after the State of the State address back in January.
Yeah.
What do you make of these last 4 months?
Well, it's been in some ways crazy, in some ways not surprising.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, once things broke a couple hours after you and I sat in that chamber
exactly.
together at the State of the State address, everything has been just kind of up and down. And there's so many fingers to this. I mean, Rachel has been doing a terrific job, and part of the court case, she's been handling all the stuff in court. I actually personally know several of the players, including the judge and Dowd, and a couple of the other lawyers. Jason Rosenbaum and I interviewed one of the former campaign people yesterday, who gave a rather riveting story, as far as I was concerned, about the how the consultants had been trying to get Greitens to run for lieutenant governor, and when he decided to let them know in March 2015 that he was going to run for governor instead, and frankly, that's the same month when some of this stuff in the basements apparently was going on. I mean, when you think about it, your head kind of explodes.
It really is quite remarkable. And Rachel, I mean, you cover courts all the time. Part of what's so remarkable about this case is those fingers, as Joe Manis put it, all the different tentacles of this case that reach into so many places, including some pretty high-powered attorneys, right?
Yes. I had one attorney who I spoke to call this basically an all-star game for the legal community. When you look at the team, especially Governor Greitens has assembled, you've got St. Louis's equivalent of attorney to the stars, Scott Rosenblum. He's got a former Democratic alderman and a couple of former judges. I think is Dowd also
yes,
a former judge.
And
U.S.
Ed's
attorney.
And he's a big
Democratic donor. You've got two former U.S. attorneys in there. You've got two people associated with the Waco investigation. Obviously, all of these roles sort of overlap and cross over each other. Like people are multiple things, but yes, it's a quite the team that he has assembled. I'd love to know. I'm assuming that his legal bills are more than a lot of us see in a year in terms of salary.
But we don't know.
We don't know who's paying for him.
Which will be an ongoing story about this case as we continue. Let's start with the prosecutor, Kim Gardner, the St. Louis City Circuit Attorney. She herself has been one of the most controversial parts of this case, almost from the moment the first charges were filed. Rachel.
Yeah, she has. And I can't tell if a lot of this is just, you know, kind of rookie missteps or if this is something that, you know, they are doing because they are aware that the case is weak. Even yesterday, her assistant had to stand up and answer the judge. Yes, they still don't have a photo and they still don't have an evidence of a transmission. Right now, the case is entirely circumstantial. She has been accused and sanctioned several times of not turning over exculpatory evidence or helpful evidence for the governor. And actually, the public defender's office here in the city of St. Louis just filed a motion earlier this week claiming that it is not an isolated problem to the Governor Greitens case, that she is doing similar discovery violations, turning over evidence late in sort of everyday, quote unquote, run of the mill cases for, you know, your regular defendants in the city of St. Louis.
But Joe, I mean, you've covered Kim Gardner. She's big. She's a well-known figure in St. Louis politics and Missouri politics as a state representative. Do you think this is an unusual turn in her political career? She definitely has not shied away from controversy.
Well, some of this is unusual. She won a crowded Democratic primary a couple of years ago.
Unexpectedly, too. Yeah, I don't think that she was necessarily the candidate that people thought would win. She was definitely running as more of the reformist of the judicial system candidate.
Right. And I did a story on her at the time and some stuff since then. While she's respected, shortly after she took office, there's been this massive defection of a number of the veteran lawyers in the circuit attorney staff, which I think has hampered her ability to kind of take charge of some of this. In fact, some of the players, including Mike Hafner, the former campaign person that Jason and I interviewed yesterday, his lawyer is a former member of Kim Gardner's staff. So
that's a tentacle. I didn't even know.
It's a small Missouri world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially the legal world.
So while she's respected and well-liked, I want to emphasize that, there has been some stumbles. And some of that would be typical of when you have a new person coming into an office after the previous person, in this case Jennifer Joyce, had been there a long time. So all of that collides with this court case.
I mean, she's also brought in some outside help as a special counsel. She's brought in a Harvard law professor who is probably got the celebrity factor on the prosecution side here, right? Ron Sullivan?
To some extent, yes. I bet you if you ask sort of most of the average people, they're not going to necessarily know who Ron Sullivan is in terms of, like, if you mention the name in the same way that someone in St. Louis might have heard of Scott Rosenblum. He is, it was announced yesterday, going to be doing something associated with the trial. We don't know specifically what role he's going to play, but he will be in court. Robert Steele, who is a member of Kim Gardner's staff, is going to be the lead prosecutor doing opening and closing, etc.
Now, over on the defense side, you've mentioned already that there's this sort of all-star cast, Edward Dowd and Jim Bennett and Jim Martin, all of these former prosecutors or judges. But you also have, and who apparently will be presenting a lot of the case, Scott Rosenblum. He's well-known in St. Louis. I don't think he's as well-known here in Kansas City. Tell us about Scott Rosenblum.
He is, as I put it, Scott, the St. Louis's equivalent of the attorney to the stars.
Yes,
he has represented Nelly and Marshall Faulk and Leonard Little, and he likes to take on the sort of big, challenging, you could never get these guys off cases, and a lot of times is able to get a jury to find them not guilty. He has this shtick where he is able to memorize the names of the jurors and not look at the jury sheet, so he will address them as Mr. Smith or, you know, Mrs. Davis, or, you know, whatever their names are. And that actually became an amusing point of contention in the pretrial hearing yesterday, where the judge, in an effort to, you know, tamp down the publicity that's going to be on this case, was like, we're using badge numbers for the jurors. And Rosenblum was just like, you're going against 35 years of muscle memory for me. I've never had to do this. So the judge conceded to some extent and said, we will use last names only. So he'll be able to do his, you know, Miss Man is, how are you today? How are you? And sort of play that up kind of thing. It's one of his things. He's sort of the jury picker,
And also, I mean, also well known on top of these well known attorneys, you have the judge. You have Judge Rex Burleson.
Yes, I know him.
Joe, you know him personally. Who is Rex Burleson?
Well, Rex Burleson actually had previously been, well, he was appointed to the bench by Jay Nixon.
He was appointed to the city bench by
yes,
Jay Nixon.
Right.
He was previously on the bench in St. Charles County, which is just west of us here in St. Louis. Was in private practice before that, then went to work for Nixon as
yes.
attorney general and then as governor.
Yes. In fact, I dealt with him a lot, Burleson a lot, when he was on Nixon's staff. So
are there any concerns about his Democratic politics in his background presiding over the trial of Eric Greitens?
Not that you've really heard. I mean, if you watch him in court, he's pretty much just, you know, going to shut stuff down kind of regardless of what's going on. I mean, he sanctioned the Democratic prosecutor who brought this case against him. And you also have Democrats, prominent Democrats, working for the governor on their defense team. So I think it's something that people were like, it really needs to be mentioned and
yeah.
highlighted. But one attorney I spoke to was like, this is actually going to help in this case. He knows what's political and what's legal and can allow the
yeah.
political to go forward, but stop it when he needs to.
So jury selection started today. They expect that to just be today and tomorrow and expect the trial to start on Monday. KCUR will have ongoing coverage of the trial, mostly from our colleagues at St. Louis Public Radio, including Rachel and Joe and also Jason Rosenbaum, who I gather will have to dash in and out of the court where they're not allowed to have recording equipment to file
stories. We have a system worked up. There'll be two of us. Jason and I will be sort of rotating in and out. We can work in an overflow room.
Perfect.
So,
yeah, and I'll be in Jeff City helping to cover the end of the session
because
and the impeachment. I have to like come home and do laundry between the two.
We've got
overrated, Jeff.
Plenty of work left to do. That's Joe Manis and Rachel Lippman from St. Louis Public Radio. Thank you both for being with us.
Our pleasure.
I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. Welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske. Yesterday, we heard from two volunteers who answer calls at a local suicide hotline. You can hear their stories and all our past episodes at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, join us. We'll learn how one local organization is using videos of puppets to increase awareness about drug addiction, gun violence, and other issues facing underserved youth. That's tomorrow on Up to Date. Well, it's the end of an era here at KCUR. After 40 years on the air, Cypress Avenue and host Bill Shapiro signed off last week. This Friday, we'll see a 40th anniversary celebration at the Folly Theater. And Up to Date thought this might be the perfect time to bring you Steve Kraske's interview with Bill, recorded earlier this week. Here's Steve.
For 40 years, he's offered us his thoughtful insights into the world of popular music. Now Bill Shapiro is ready to step back from the mic and bring an end to his beloved Cypress Avenue, his weekly radio program here at KCUR. And what a ride it's been. The lawyer who always wanted to be a disc jockey will celebrate the end of his run on Friday night at the Folly Theater, the musical guest, Kelly Hunt. Bill Shapiro joins us now and... Well, partner, congratulations on just an absolutely amazing run.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And joining him is his longtime producer, Ron Jones. He's KCUR's Director of Community Engagement. Ron, nice to have you, too.
It's great to be here, Steve.
Well, how tough is this for you, Bill, to bring this show to an end?
Actually, it isn't that tough.
Really?
Well, after 40 years.
That's not the answer I expected, Bill. Yeah.
After 40 years, I've kind of run the route, so to speak. And I'm proud of what I've done, and I don't feel the need to be on the air every week.
What do you like about doing it each week? What's been the particular joy for you?
The joy has been that it's caused me to be constantly aware of what's happening in the recorded music marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've done over the years, one of my favorite formats is the survey show to let people know what's out there.
I love those shows, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And for that very reason, you're not going to find out about that stuff anywhere else.
Yeah.
So that has held me pretty tight.
What will you miss most about not doing the show?
I really don't know the answer to that one. I've done it for so long, I imagine that I'll miss my buddy here. He and I have gotten to be pretty good friends, and
the bigger question is, will Ron miss you?
That's his problem, not mine.
Ron, you want to weigh in here?
I'll tell you. No. Of course, you know, for me, it's been more than just being his producer, as he alluded to. You know, we've created a really close friendship that is that has lasted for more than 30 years for me, but. But,
Because, Ron, you were his producer in your first time here at KCUR. Then you left and bounced around other public radio stations, then came back and reunited in a sense.
Right. Yeah, I was Bill's producer. I started at KCUR in January of 1980 and soon after became producer of Cypress Avenue. And I did that until 1993 and then moved to Boston and subsequently Chicago and the Detroit area. And I was gone for 20 years, and then when I came back in 2013,
guess who was still on the air?
Bill was still on the air. And you know the beauty of that, Steve. Even for those 20 years that I was gone, Bill and I remained in contact.
Yeah. No kidding.
We talked probably every other month for 20 years.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. You know, Bill, you're such an unusual combination of vocations, lawyer and disc jockey. I mean, you're covering all corners of your brain, I think, by doing that. Am I right?
Yeah. I guess. I think of them fairly separately, as a matter of fact. The lawyer thing was to earn a living and to give me the money to buy the music that I play on Cypress Avenue.
Yeah.
The Cypress Avenue thing is clearly my lifelong passion.
So how many CDs and how many record albums do you own?
Oh, good Lord.
Do you have a number?
I don't have a number. I think of the LPs in terms of linear feet, seriously. And Ron's laughing over here, but he's seen them. I don't count them. I don't have time to mess with that. I keep them alphabetized.
You know, one time you were kind enough to invite Ron and me to your house, and we were sitting there in your music room, in your living room. And what struck me about the room was any number of things. But you asked me to sit on the couch, and at a certain point on the couch where the music would envelop me most effectively. And at that point on your couch, it was pretty well worn. You know, it's clearly where you had spent a lot of time carefully listening to the music you were picking.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
the program's about my passion for music, and it's a true passion, and I love to listen. And I don't get tired of listening.
Where did that passion come from in your life?
That's a good question, and I was thinking about that before we sat down today because I figured it would come up. I had a maternal grandfather who was a Russian immigrant to this country who had an RCA Victor Victrola that played 78 RPM records. And the first time I heard it, I didn't want to walk away from it. And you talk about things happening, you know, just in certain ways. He didn't have that many records. But my mother's closest friend's husband was in the coin-operated vending machine business in this town, and he had all kinds of records that came off the jukeboxes. So that was my first source, and that's why pop music is what, you know, it was my turn on.
You would get the old 78s that came off that jukebox.
Right. You know, they didn't have anything else to do with them, so I took them and listened to them.
You know, how did you get the show? Because there's a good story there.
I wanted to be a disc jockey.
And you told management here that's what you wanted to do.
That's right. I did.
And they said yes.
Yes, they did, obviously.
You named the show after a Van Morrison song, by the same name. Let's listen to it, because I'm not sure a lot of listeners will realize that Van Morrison had a song titled Cypress Avenue.
Thanks.
I'm caught one more time up on Cypress Avenue. Caught one more time up on Cypress Avenue. And I'm conquered in a car seat. Nothing that I can do. I may go crazy before that mansion on the hill.
I may go crazy. Before that mansion on the hill. But my heart keeps beating faster. Yeah, my feet can't keep still.
That's Van Morrison's version of Cypress Avenue. That's the song that Bill Shapiro named his program after so many years ago. I'm visiting with Bill and his longtime producer, Ron Jones. Why did you name the show after that song, Bill? And what a great song that is. Man.
I needed to have a name for the show. And my first impulse was music. Because that's what it was all about.
Plain and simple, yeah.
And that seemed a little too generic after a while.
You think?
And so I had to come up with something, and it just struck me that if I had to pick my favorite song, it would be Cypress Avenue by Van Morrison.
What a great track.
Yeah.
You love that guy, Van Morrison.
I do.
You're emotional just listening to that song. We just listened to it here. You've heard of it how many times, and it still obviously moves
you. It touches my soul. There's no question about it.
Yeah. Van Morrison has hung with you all these years. What is it about Van Morrison's music that it's drawn you so much?
Well, I think it's the fact that the guy sings his heart out, in a sense. There's a feeling of honesty, honest emotion behind what he does. And also, his work covers such a broad spectrum of the musical scene. It's not, you can't really point your finger and say he's a rock and roll singer. He's not a jazz singer. But he's both those things and more.
Yeah. Is that still your favorite song even today?
Yeah, probably is.
Of all these songs, that's it.
If I had to pick one, it would probably be that, yeah.
That's amazing. You modeled this show after a jazz program hosted by Billy Taylor.
Right,
I did. A great jazz pianist. Tell us about it. Why did you do that?
Well, I spent a year in New York City going to graduate law school, and Billy Taylor had a show in New York that played on the radio, and I was fascinated by it because he did something that I hadn't heard anybody else do. He didn't just play a song and say, that's da-da, ba-di-di, and off we go. He would talk about it. He would get you into it. He would tell you what made it interesting, and that stuck with me.
Ron Jones, is that type of format to a music program, is that what drew you to want to be involved with this thing to begin with?
Oh, it certainly was. You know, Bill's ability to tell stories. And, you know, if you think about it, that's what he excels at, telling stories about the music in this case. And I was just so fascinated, you know, when I heard him place popular music in a social context.
Right.
You know, I was just, like, attracted to that and, you know, wanted to be involved with it.
There's so much more to the music than just the notes, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, you once said, Bill, that at first, when you first began the program, you weren't very good. And boy, can I relate to that feeling. I've been told that more than once, as a matter of fact. But you had the same experience. I was gratified to hear that, actually.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'd never done radio before. And I don't have any fear of microphone or fear of being in front of people. That isn't what got to me here. It was, what am I going to do to fill an hour of music and make it worthwhile?
At one point in your career, you have said that you considered making Cypress Avenue your main focus. That surprised me a little bit. Leaving the law and doing the music thing, how close did you come?
Not really very
Not
close.
Really?
It was probably just something that I would love to have done that, but I had to earn a living in order to buy the music that I wanted to listen to.
Yeah. Darn it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's too bad.
It is. I also like to eat and do other things.
Don't we all? Well, here's some trivia for you. Your first show aired in 1978 from the station's old headquarters on Holmes Street near the UMKC campus. In fact, today, I spent some time in that home still today. It's home to UMKC student newspaper. I don't know if you knew that or not.
I did not.
The first show had the theme Ballads by Rockers, and the first song was this one.
Mm-hmm.
nothing more that we can do. Love is the opening door. Love is what we came here for. No one could offer you more. Do you know what I mean? Have your eyes really seen?
You say it's very hard to leave behind the light. There's no other way. Now it's really up to you.
Love is the key we must turn. Truth is the flame we must burn. Freedom the lesson we must learn. You know what I mean? Have your eyes really seen?
That song, the first one Bill Shapiro ever played on Cypress Avenue 40 years ago, that's Elton John's Love Song. Do you remember why that was your first one? I mean, and I listened to that for the first time on Saturday getting ready for this, and it's been in my mind ever since. What a great track. I hadn't heard that song in years.
I can't tell you how I picked it out. I remember agonizing about what am I going to play to start this show on the road. And I listened to a number of things, and I put that on, and it met my soul.
What a great song. What a great song. You know, going back in your own life and the importance that music has played in it, Bill, during the 1950s here in Kansas City, there was a guy named Norman Granz produced this series, Jazz at the Philharmonic, featuring these iconic lineups of jazz greats. You always made a point of attending these concerts at the Music Hall when they came to town. Man, I would have loved to have been there with you. What do you recall about these Norman Granz produced lineups that came to Kansas City?
Oh, it was an amazing experience because I was a hardcore jazz buff at that time. Still like jazz, but I hadn't found my passion for popular music. So Norman Granz was, you know, he was a king. He was bringing me music nobody else was bringing, and I'd listen to it constantly. I mean, music, as I'm sure you've guessed, has just been an integral part of my existence ever since I first heard it, and it plays all the time when I have the opportunity.
Ella Fitzgerald always closed out those concerts. You got to hear and see Ella Fitzgerald.
Oh, yeah. I saw a number of the Jazz at the Philharmonic concerts. They came through Kansas City. I can't remember how many years, but it was an awesome experience. I mean, you had the best instrumentalists in the world playing whatever instrument they played. And then they always had Ella. And
wow.
If you have Ella, you've got it all.
You got it all. I was just going to say, another key moment for you in your life, and I want to talk to you about this, Bill. You can still recall the time and the date, 6:30 p.m., January 28th, 1956. On television that night during the Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey bandstand show, a young man from Memphis, Tennessee was introduced. His name was Elvis Presley, and this is the song that you heard that night.
Well, that's all right, Mama. That's all right for you. That's all right, Mama, just any way you do. That's all right, that's all right. That's all right, Mama, any way you do. Well, Mama, she done told me, Papa done told me too. Son, that gal you fooling with, she ain't no good for you. But that's all right, that's all right. It's all right, Mama, anyway, do.
Well, that's the king, Bill. How did you react to what you heard that night?
Thanks for bringing it back.
Yeah.
I remember it. It's one of those moments that we have an experience that is just so potent that everything is frozen. I remember that night with that kind of clarity. I was going to school then in St. Louis, Washington University in St. Louis. My closest friend lived there, and he was the only guy I ever knew who could play jazz piano. He could sit down at a keyboard and improvise, and it was wonderful. But he didn't get into the other kind of music. And I was at his house, and he was in another part of the house, and that song came on, and I was just absolutely gobsmacked.
Huh.
So,
as was the rest of the country.
As was the rest of the country, that's right. And so I remember going upstairs, knocking on the door and saying, I don't care what you're doing, you got to come downstairs right now and hear and see what's going on, which he did. I don't think he appreciated it as much as I did, but we sat there captivated by it.
And he gobsmacked you and the country at that moment, Bill. Why? I mean, what was it about the way he played that just took the world by storm?
It was unique. I'd never seen anything like it before. And, you know, I'd been a music fan since I was literally 5 years old and got an RCA Victor Victrola for Christmas.
We're visiting with Bill Shapiro as he recalls 40 years of doing Cypress Avenue. And I should point out the 40th anniversary celebration of Cypress Avenue and a tribute to Bill Shapiro will be at 8 Friday evening at the Folly Theater. For more information and tickets, call the Folly box office. That's 816-474-4444 or go to follytheater.org. So again, music was with you all the way from the time you were a little boy and it never left you.
That's correct.
Did you have any musical talent yourself? Just looking at you, I can just tell the answer is no.
Great question. My parents thought, you know, he loves it this much. Let's get him something away from a radio or a phonograph, see if he can do something creative. So they sent me for piano lessons, and I wasn't good, and I didn't relate to it well, and so it didn't last very long. But I continue to want to hear nothing but music. And as I said, at that point, I was very much a jazz fan. And I decided I wanted to play the vibraphone. So I went to Quigley Music in this town, and I took vibraphone lessons, and I played the vibes for a while. And I really wasn't very good at it. There was no confusion about how long I was going to play.
Yeah, it just didn't work, eh?
It didn't work. As I said to people back then, I play the phonograph better than anybody I ever met.
And we're going to stick right with that and not make this too complicated,
I know what
right?
I do well. Let's stay with that.
Yeah. Well, you're a Kansas City kid. You went to Southwest High School, and there you ran into a guy named Kelvin Trillin. Didn't you end up doing a comedy act with him?
Oh, yeah.
Who became the great writer for The New Yorker and everyone else.
Yeah, Buddy. He was Buddy, his nickname. He and I were very close friends. He was a year ahead of me in school. And we did a comedy routine at high school assemblies and things of that nature. And
were you funny?
We thought so. They invited us back. We must have been halfway good. I don't know.
Well, you mentioned you graduated from Washington University in St. Louis as well as the University of Michigan Law School. At Washington University, you are president of the Bearskin Follies and president of your fraternity, ZBT. What were the Bearskin Follies, or do I not want to know?
Boy, have you done your research. I'm really impressed, I'll tell you. The Bearskin Follies were an annual event at Washington University, which was a Greek school, fraternities and sororities. And every year, the fraternities and sororities would put together a musical event that they would perform. And they were the acts that made up the Bearskin Follies.
And you just introduced them, but you didn't take part, I don't imagine.
Oh, unfortunately, I did.
Yeah. And we have some tape right now that Ron Jones has dug up. We'll be playing that here just briefly. Yeah. So why did you become a lawyer? Because what's the law have to do with any of this stuff?
I became a lawyer because I wanted to make a living.
Yeah, okay. But what drew you to the law?
I don't know what drew me. I mean, my dad was a physician. Everybody that my parents knew were physicians. So only people I knew were professional people. So when I went to college, I was an English major. I had tried to play an instrument. I took piano lessons. I was awful. Mm-hmm. When I got really hooked on jazz, I talked them into letting me take vibraphone lessons.
Yeah.
I wasn't any better. So it became pretty clear that, you know, I was a listener and that's what I should be and what I am.
Again, we're visiting with Bill Shapiro about his 40-year run at Cypress Avenue. You know, I mentioned your enduring appreciation of Van Morrison and Elvis, for that matter. The other guy you talked about so much on the show was a man named Bob Dylan. Dylan and Van Morrison, are those the two top ones on your list after all these years?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think Dylan is one of the great cultural creations of his time.
And yet he can't sing worth a darn. And, I mean, it's an amazing thing, Bob Dylan, just who he is and what he's become.
I agree with you. He can't sing, but because he is such a genius with meaning, words, and melody, it doesn't matter. We'll listen to him anyway, or I will anyway. A lot of people are turned off because of that nasal quality and everything else. Yeah. But
did you ever meet him or Van Morrison?
No, never did. I've never played the part of wanting to be that close a fan. I've seen them live on numerous occasions, but I didn't try to go backstage.
If you could sit down and have a conversation with one of the great pop artists, who would you pick?
I'd probably have to pick Dylan. Mm-hmm. I think that he's truly the most creative of those that have been around. But you've named both of them. You're right on the money. In terms of just what touches my soul, Van Morrison does.
Who have you met in the business, Bill, that, you know, after you met him, you didn't want to wash your hand? I mean, that kind of thing. Have you had a chance to meet some of the greats, or is it just not played out that way?
It just hasn't played out that way.
Yeah.
I mean, I do the Folly series here in town. That's the first time that I've been involved in promotion like that. But no, I'm not into that.
So how has the music changed? What's been the evolution during these 40 years, and has it changed for the better?
Oh, I think it's changed for the better. That's a tough question. I think the breadth of it is the biggest thing. We have so many influences now. We have access to so much. It's amazing what's out there that, you know, not only what's being currently done, but the history of it all is there today. I mean, you ask me how many LPs or CDs do I have? It goes on for miles, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah,
it's a treasure trove. It really is.
You almost wonder sometimes: do we have access to too much? I mean, it's just overwhelming for people to figure out where to go and without guides like you to figure out where to go and who to listen to.
Well, I mean, they're alphabetized. That's the best thing I can tell you. I mean, I do them by category, by rock, by folk, by jazz. And then they're alphabetized so I can have access to them.
Do you have trouble keeping up with all that's going on out there even now?
I would say that's true because I don't keep up much anymore. I don't find much creativity out there. It's been a long time since a new voice came along that made my ears stand up, and I sat back and went, wow.
When was the last time that happened? Can you recall?
I don't recall. I'd like to be able to, but I don't recall.
Rhiannon Giddens?
She certainly did that.
You brought her to the Folly Theater. She used to be with the Carolina Chocolate Drops.
Right,
And she, I was there that night. That was a show that I won't forget for a long time.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, how do you feel about the future of pop music as you leave your career here? Because, as you know, critics have said over and over again that rock and roll is dead and the music is hardly evolving anymore. What do you make about that kind of criticism?
I think it's garbage.
Do you?
I do. I think that music is a part of the human condition. It's been around since the ancient Greeks, for heaven's sake. Been around by, you know, in prehistoric cultures. There's a part of the human being that responds to music, whether it's the rhythm, whether it's the melody, the combination of it. But it's like food or water or anything else. If you have access to it, you want it.
Hip-hop and rap, what do you make of it?
Well, I think that there's a lot of creativity there, no question about it. I'm amazed at the wordplay. I find it to be pretty much a Johnny One-Note thing. There's not enough variety to it to hold me. I can appreciate it when it's done well, but I don't seek it out.
Okay, Bill, final question. Best concert you ever saw?
Oh, wow.
I've got an answer you once gave if you want me to jog your memory.
Yeah, I'm going to need that.
Bruce Springsteen at Memorial Hall in Kansas City, Kansas. What do you remember about that night?
I remember being gobsmacked. I remember, you know, I'd seen a lot of music.
You once said about that night, Bill, that Bruce Springsteen walked on stage precisely at 8 o'clock, and at midnight, he was still playing. That's something.
That's something. I would have to say that if I had to pick one, and I don't think you can really, that would probably be it. I mean, Springsteen as a live performer is just beyond belief. He lays it all out. He gives you 150% of who he is, and you feel it.
Well, Bill Shapiro, you've given us an awful lot, too, over the years, and I want you to know how much we're going to miss you. We're going to miss the show, and thanks for all the recommendations and all the great hours of listening, because I, for one, sure appreciated it.
Well, you're very kind, and I appreciate your taking the time to do this.
You bet. Ron Jones, thank you very much as well.
Thank you, Steve. It's been great.
That's Bill Shapiro recalling 40 years as the host of Cypress Avenue.
And that was Steve Kraske. So yesterday on the program, we learned why some people think Kansas City is giving out too many tax credits for downtown development. You can hear that conversation and all our previous episodes at kcur.org/up-to-date. Also, find us on Twitter. We're at @KCURUpToDate, and I'm at @PTSBrian. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook, too. On tomorrow's Up to Date, a look at the gun violence, hunger, and drug use that some of our city's kids are forced to face. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, and Claire Verbeck. I'm Brian Ellison, and you are Up to Date.